The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. All on a count of four. Brady's here. Rich is here. Artie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy? It's a Wednesday. What's going on?
It's not a Wednesday. It's Christmas Eve, baby.
Oh, you're feeling good.
Can't wait.
Yeah, opening day tomorrow. You're liking that, huh?
Let's go. Enough of all that spring training stuff. They make it sound like it's bad.
No, it's phenomenal.
I spent a very fun week at spring training.
How are you, Brady?
I'm very happy because of baseball, but that's the only thing that I'm happy about right now.
Yeah, you came in with a little bit of a tune today.
What an attitude today.
Popping a tune.
Brady doesn't want me to talk about how bad he played yesterday.
No, I want you to tell the truth. I'll talk about how bad I played. I single-handedly lost the game for us yesterday.
Wow.
I have to agree.
How many points did you score, Arnie?
I scored three.
3 points, yes. But it's all his fault?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Arnie shot, like, I would say 1 for 3 for the game. Was it 1 for 3? I think you missed a 3, and you had a nice pump fake, which you actually took a 2, and you missed a little floater.
Did I miss a 2? Oh, yeah, when I came in.
I forgot about
So I think
that.
You were 1 for 3.
Give or take. I don't even know.
I was probably, I had 9 points. Ah. I hit 2 threes and 3 free throws.
Okay, sounds good.
Things got chippy.
Well, number one, 9 points in that league is not good enough for me.
Horrible. Horrible.
And then when you factor in that, I had 2 field goals on probably 2 of 15 shooting.
Oh. Yeah, give or take.
2 of 15.
Yeah. And we lost by 2. So if I hit
58-56.
If I hit any number of the wide open layups or putbacks that I have, number one, we win the game. Number two, we win going away. And number three, I don't feel as awful as I feel today.
So you're basically Carmelo Anthony.
Oh, worse than that.
Just keep shooting even though you can't make a bucket.
No, see, it wasn't that. It wasn't like I was ball hog chucking. What would happen is I would get a wide open shot, miss it, get 3 rebounds, and miss all of those as well. So it wasn't like I was just throwing them up.
So almost had a double-double with all those offensive
boards. It got so bad,
boards.
I almost substituted in the game for him.
And you know what? I would have told him not to, but he probably would have been right.
Can Arnie substitute?
No, I really can't, so I didn't. But I had to come into the game anyway. It was our best player got hurt.
I thought he was the girl that he is.
No, I'm just kidding.
Well,
did he have a boo-boo? What happened to Phil? What happened to Phil there, Brady?
He fell pretty hard on his hip, so yeah. I would say
dislocated his hip or something like that.
Oh, well, I guess that's valid.
Well, we could have surgery today. Could have finished the game.
You hurt your toenail and you're gone for a week.
You could have surgery today. Just because you dislocate your hip doesn't mean this was you break your hip.
Oh, well.
There you go.
Oh, well.
Well, Brady,
we'll make it quick. Well, that's quick, yeah.
And Brady, are you going to play tonight? You going to be there tonight?
I'm going to play tonight. I got a full show, Champlain Valley Game Night, but I will play tonight, so I'll be there a little after 7.
And you know what? I see this coming. He's going off for about 36 tonight.
Yeah, but this is a lot easier because there's no refs and it's call your own fouls.
And tonight's ballers night. I kind of wish Brady wasn't, really good ballers.
What are you talking about?
And me. So I'm thinking maybe tonight might not be a good night for Brady to break out of his slump. But what the hell, Everybody's invited, Rich.
Says the guy who scored a third as many points as Brady did last night.
Yeah.
But on one fifth of the amount of shots.
And the one I made, I screamed, "That's no good. I missed it. I missed that one right in."
Yeah.
Didn't feel good.
No elbows to the ribs, no broken bones.
I talked a little trash to the one
Brady
guy.
Brady talked trash, got mad. I was kind of, mixing it up. No,
of
I was
course.
Mixing it up with so I called one guy. I said I got the little guy. He got upset. I'm like, dude, you're 5'2". I go, what do you think I'm going to call you, Kareem? I mean, seriously,
he's called a 5'2" guy Kareem.
Yeah, like, I got Kareem here. I mean, he got so upset about it.
Well, I can't imagine why.
I don't know, but he didn't do nothing. He was like the worst guy on the damn court.
That's like when people used to come up to me because I'm 6'5", and they'd be like, "Oh my god, you're so tall. Do you play basketball?" And I'm like, "Are you a jockey?" Like, I know that I'm tall. Like, so that was always my response.
Yeah. I mean, the officiating is non-existent in that YMCA league. That's why one of my buddies who I play with on Monday, once they got hurt, somebody stepped on his ankle and pushed him on purpose, and I think he broke his ankle, so he got knocked out of the game.
Boy, So much for the Christian portion of Young Men's Christian Association.
All right, we got a busy show, but we're not working tomorrow. Brady, what's coming up this week? What's coming up tomorrow?
Tomorrow, we're going to be watching opening day at RJ's. Yeah. We'll be there 4 p.m. It is opening day. Our friends at Sam Adams are sending us there, so they'll have all kinds of specials. $3 Sam Adams drafts. They'll have that New England IPA there as well. Tons of giveaways. We'll have plenty of swag, and we're giving away a pair of Red Sox tickets. Ugh. Next Tuesday, remember, trivia at the Burger Bar, 7:30 to 9:30. They will have half-price appetizers. So that's right in Colchester, right across from Fannie Allen, right next to St. Michael's. So if you're a St. Mike student and you're looking for something fun to do close to campus, that's a place to go and hang out with us. As for what's coming up on the show today, we'll get our Golic and Wingo Word of the Day winners at 4:20 and 5:20. We'll talk with former NFL head of officiating Jim Deopoulos. We'll talk to him at 4:35 about the new NFL rule changes. Buster Olney of ESPN at 5 o'clock. But first, Arnie, baseball is back tomorrow. Rich and I are ecstatic.
Yeah.
You look like you would rather be anywhere else than talking with us.
I was listening to Colin today. I kind of agree with him. If the World Series was in August, it'd be a hell of a lot better for baseball than if you go ahead and spill into the NFL and in the NFL season and college football season. I like opening day, but then after opening day, the excitement doesn't continue because there's 161 left. And I've said this before, and I've said it to you, Rich, and Brady nonstop. Baseball really does have to go to the split season. It's more money to beneficial for the owners and all that. But, yeah, I'm excited about the opening day, but it goes down after that because there's another 161 left.
You do realize this is the 500th time you've said we need to go to a split season, and I've never once in my life heard another human being state that Major League Baseball needs to go to a split season.
Well, but everybody else does it, so it's just...
Well, a couple of minor league teams do, leagues do.
I could make a strong case for the owners. Two opening days, two pennant races, more people go to the games, more money in the owner's pocket. There's zero against it. I can't think of one bad thing to go into the split season. There's zero.
Have you ever heard anyone to bring that up other than Arnie?
Arnie's
not a bad idea. It's just
Arnie's points are well taken, but you have other things in there. What about prospects and service time and all that? How do you justify it if a guy comes up at the end of season one? So that's all tough. Contractually, it's going to be difficult. Then you're going to throw in other things like the record book being altered. Are you going to have an MVP for the first half and the second half? Are you going to combine the two? All of those things logistically, I think, make it
tough. Well, I would
say
whatever they did in, 1982, when they had the split season, let's go ahead and do that. I don't know if they had two MVPs or one, or if they just combined the season or whatever they did then. Let's go ahead and do whatever they did in 1982 or whatever that year was.
It makes sense in the minors. It's pretty simple because you have prospects coming and going right and left. If your team goes 54-20 in the first half of the season, and you roll to that. Guess why you're 54-20? Because players played really well, and guess where they are in the second half of the
season?
Not
there anymore.
They aren't there anymore.
I will prove you a point. Town Fair Tire text line 802-655-6672. How many people are pumped up? First of all, how many people are coming down the RJs to see the opening day? How many people are pumped up for opening day of baseball? Or how many people just, it's another day in the week. Yes, I like that baseball starting, but how many people are going to be like me, like, okay, I'll be all happy after this weekend. After this weekend, I'm not going to, give or take, I'll watch a game here, maybe part of a game here, but I don't have the time to sit down for 3 hours of baseball.
I think one of the great things about baseball, though, is once it starts, it's just constant. I certainly learned that the interesting way last summer. There's never any break. And I kind of like that because it's, you get into a routine. On some Tuesday night that I can get in the car, listen to Champlain Valley game night for a little while, a very little while, and then you've got the game on radio, and it's the one sport to me that translates well to radio.
Arnie, I think this is also the case in this region, at least, usually. And this year, I think it's a bit different, but traditionally, I think Red Sox fan and Yankee fans after opening day kind of check out because you look at it and say a couple of things. One, in the Boston fans' case, well, the Celtics have had success lately, as have the Bruins, so I'm going to transition back from opening day to following my teams that are in the playoffs. I'll pick baseball back up in June. The other thing that people traditionally, I think, struggle with about baseball is they say, well, look, we know the Red Sox and Yankees are going to be good. Let's just fast forward to the pennant race in October. Me, as a Mariners fan, I say, or the pennant race in August or so. I say, the season's over by July 1st. I'm excited now. It's kind of the same thing with Patriot fans. Patriot fans don't care about the NFL draft because, well, wait, we're picking 31, 32 every single year. Rich doesn't care about the draft. Giant fans this year all about the draft because they're finishing second. So I think it all depends on how good your team is. Also, this year I think it's different. Yankee fans are in tune with Stanton and Judge. Yeah. Red Sox fans want to see their young prospects, their new manager. They're going to be paying tabs on the Yankees. But I think traditionally that's why fans check out after opening
Rich,
day.
Look at the Tougher Tar text line. Read all the ones and say, wow, I am pumped up for opening day tomorrow.
Yeah, I gotcha. The last one is from last night.
Yeah, there you go, bingo.
And it's from your wife saying thank you.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not sure I even want to know.
That goes to show you, because if I said how many people are pumped up for Patriots opening day tomorrow against whoever, against, you know,
Kansas City last year.
or whoever. I mean, could you imagine how many people would be texting now? Are you pumped up for the Celtics? Okay, not as much as the Patriots, but you better believe we're getting, this is our year. We'll get a few of those.
Opening day NBA, I don't think has that same
cachet.
I bet you we get more text than we are now. And look, maybe NBA doesn't have that cachet. I kind of agree there, but baseball is too long. People just don't get into it from the very start. You know,
Cody in Plattsburgh, good job, my friend. I'm pumped for opening day, leaving work early. So
good.
I take it he's getting on the ferry and coming over for some wings at RJ's tomorrow. But no, for me, there's some sort of romance about, and I've said this before, about baseball and opening day and the coming of spring and the coming of summer and the constancy that is a baseball broadcast every single night. There's something romantic about baseball. With football, they have a built-in situation where you're going to have fans automatically because game one is one of 16 games. Every game means everything to every team.
You know what hurts baseball? It just occurred. I've never said this before on the air. First time I've even thought about it. And I'm wondering if it turns out. I think baseball gets hurt because it's the most enjoyable game to go in person.
Mm-hmm.
And that way people are like, you know what? I love going to the game in person.
Yeah.
But, man, I can't, I just can't sit through a three-hour television game or, you know, sit through something like that. I think people enjoy, and I think that hurts Major League Baseball. People that want to hear football, people listen to football on the radio, watch it on TV. Doesn't make a difference who's playing. NBA, it translates good on television. People, hockey, they debate whether it's good for TV or not. You can't follow the puck. I think baseball is the best game to go in person. That's why not as many people really get into it when it's on television. I could be wrong on that, but that's why the ratings are kind of low.
Baseball is the best game to go watch in person, and I'd rather see a football game tenfold in my house than out in, you know. Now, I know baseball weather is not good in April in a lot of places, but I'd rather see, you know, I don't want to watch football in person very often when it's 20 and snowing and there's 35 mile an hour winds in a lot of these places. Football is not as good to watch in person. NBA games are hugely expensive.
Yes, they are, and they're just a circus.
Yeah, I mean, there's
like
usually
the game is just an afterthought.
So
you're right about that.
It really is. I mean, I've been
it's
to
more
a bunch
of a production.
Of it's a huge production. You walk in there a half hour before the game, and it's just people dancing around and music blaring and explosions and, you know, giant gorillas jumping onto trampolines and stuffing the ball. I mean, basically, they're promoting in basketball, I think, and better. I think they market better than any other sport, the glamour and glitz of the whole thing. And just in case our team's losing by 38 at halftime, we're still going to give you your money's worth.
And baseball is synonymous with good weather. I mean, it's nice to be outside. It's also a family-friendly game. The crowds at baseball games are generally better behaved than the crowds at football games. I mean, I know at Old Yankee Stadium and the bleachers, things could get rowdy.
Yeah.
At Wrigley, they can get rowdy. But by and large, the baseball crowd is a lot more mellow than the NFL crowd. And I haven't been to an NBA game in a very long time, so I can't speak for that anymore.
All right, a few on the Town Fair Tower text line. Jan in Underhill said, Artie should think less.
Jan.
Oh, Jan, excuse me.
Think about his name first.
Yeah. Opening day is awesome. Rich, it's true. Sitting on the deck with a beverage, listening to a ball game on the radio is American.
Yes. Or doing yard work. It was the only way my dad could ever get me to do yard work was if he promised he'd put the Sox game on the radio, blasting from the car.
All right. I mean, we're getting a lot. Luke in Burlington, I'm pumped for opening day. I love the long season until every October. Josie on the radio are all summer long. So
there's a ton of them here. Derek Middlebury, you're right, man. NHL, hands down, best sport to watch live. I would put it 1A. Hockey.
Yeah. Hockey doesn't translate well to television, though. That's what a lot of people say. That's the problem there. All right, Brady, we got a lot to get today. It's a busy show. Remember, we're not on tomorrow. We're going to be at RJ's. Join us. Come watch the game. I'll probably be there a little bit early watching my Mets get their first victory of the season. So I'm excited about that. And, of course, we got the Bruins game after the Red Sox game. But what's coming up next?
Coming up next, well, first off, you can call now if you've got Golic and Wingo's word of the day. We want to send you to see the Red Sox and Rays on April 8th, that's a Sunday. So yeah. Golic and Wingo's word of the day, caller number 5. You can get in 802-655-6672. We're 20 minutes away from Jim Deopoulos, former NFL head of officiating. But when we come back, Arnie, it's all about baseball. We'll take you through the National League storylines, baby.
All right, that's next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Arnie injured himself playing basketball.
Ah!
Again. How is it that he never sprains his mouth? This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. We have a lot to get to. Brady, who won the tickets there?
Keith from Shelburne.
Nice. We'll get the Red Sox tickets.
Week from Sunday. Very special day, April 8th.
April 8th. That's apparently Rich's birthday.
Yeah, it'll be good to finally hit 43.
Your birthday is next weekend. My birthday is Tuesday.
Yeah.
You're going to be, what, 56?
I don't want to talk about it. It's disgraceful. How can I possibly be almost 60
years old? I'm going to be 37.
Yeah.
And real quick, I just want to do a quick poll on the Town Fair Tire text line. How old do I look? Because I know I'm going to get a lot of 30s and 20s and in that
especially area. From the women.
Yeah, yeah. But if you know me, you've seen me, or maybe you could look up a picture of me.
Right.
You could go just put in an age. How old do I look? And on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672.
You're a bit rotund and follically challenged.
Wow. I choose to wear my hair like this. I would say, like, if I didn't know me and you asked me,
like,
and I said, how old does Arnie look? I would say 36.
Okay. See, I used follically challenged. Yeah. That's a nice
Brady, why don't you go first? How old do I look? You since you know me. Why don't you go first, Brady?
49.
I'd say 53.
I wasn't asking you, Rich. Derek, I wasn't asking you, Rich.
Derek at Middlebury says you look as old as your waist size.
Wow.
So that's, wait. So you look 42?
Wow. No, I'm 38. 36, 38.
Yeah, you can't lose there.
Yeah. Big Dave says I look like 67. Is that the Big Dave that never plays basketball with us? I'm very mad at that guy. Very mad. All right, Brady, let's get to some baseball. Yeah, you go ahead with the age. I want to see how many people, what they think I look like.
How old do you sound?
Brady, let's go ahead and get to some baseball.
National League storylines. Let's start with your NL East because that's where your New York Mets are. We can go team by team. There's a lot of things to get through. Biggest thing in this division is, simply put, can the Washington Nationals finally break through? This is a team with all kinds of talent, Rich. Bryce Harper's in the final year of his contract. Yeah. Daniel Murphy's in the final year of his contract. We know pitchers don't last forever, so how long can Max Scherzer be this good? Can this team finally break the door?
And they finally got Dusty Baker out the door. Dave Martinez comes in, and I'll tell you, is there a more pressure-packed managerial job in baseball than the Washington Nationals? You look at that lineup, you wonder how a team that opens with Trey Turner, Adam Eaton will be back and healthy, Harper hitting third, Rendon, who drove in 100 last year, Daniel Murphy, if he could just get healthy, he hit 322 last year. I mean, it goes on and on with this list. Ryan Zimmerman, you never talk about him. He only hit 300 with 100 RBI last
year. Yeah, what a bounce back year it was for him.
And I mean, that's just the first six or seven guys in the lineup. And you figure, well, if you've got all that offense, you can't possibly have a good pitching staff. It's an insane pitching staff. Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Gio Gonzalez, another guy under the radar.
Yeah, 15, but I don't...
I know, but he had 15 wins last year. I understand they hit for him.
I think
he had
an ERA
under 3.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a major regression candidate this year. They're still loaded, but I don't expect huge things
from Gio. It's like you're
reading
off an all-star team.
It really is. And you sit there and you go, all right, Dave Martinez, you're up next. Good luck, because this is the last year of an open window, I think, with the Nationals.
And then you talk about teams that are start. The NL East is interesting because
it's horrible.
It's not horrible. No, it's not as bad as you think it is.
Horrible.
It's a couple years away, I think.
The Nationals are at the end of their line, I think, but the Phillies and Braves are at the beginning of their line. I'm not saying they're going to contend for the division crown. But the Phillies spent a bunch of money to bring in Jake Arrieta and Carlos Santana. They've got young players in there. like Scott Kingery, who just signed that big deal before even playing an MLB game. Rhys Hoskins, who can hit for power and play first base. That's a team with some potential. And then you look at the Braves with all those prospects that are, some of which are there, some of which are coming, including the number one prospect in baseball in Ronald Acuna. The Braves are exciting. I don't know if they're ready to compete, but the Braves and Phillies are both exciting.
Did you do your order predict? Because I had
I'm not doing them in order.
Oh, because I had the Nationals, Mets, Braves, Phillies, and Marlins. I think... What's wrong with them having the Mets?
I'm just waiting for the Mets pitching staff to be hurt. That's all.
Well, don't laugh at that. You've got three starters on the DL.
But you can't. You see, that's not fair. Because I mean, if we're going to start saying about that about every team, I could say that, oh, well, I can't wait till they get injuries. And
I'm not saying I can't wait. It's just an automatic. That's all. I mean, it's just how it works.
Injuries aside, if we're just talking about talent, I couldn't even put the Mets first. As much as I wanted to put them first, and if everybody stays healthy and the pitching staff stays healthy, I couldn't even put them first over the Nationals, Brady.
Yeah, I can't put the Mets over the Nationals either. That Mets offense is, I don't want to say horrible, but it's not very good.
That's the pitching staff last year. That was just...
Yeah, but the offense for the Mets leaves nothing to be inspiring
about. Nothing. They have no offense. I mean, Cespedes is back, I guess.
You talk about, with that pitching staff, Syndergaard and DeGrom, I want to see how they are, one, health-wise, two, performance-wise, and Matt Harvey as well. Under new manager Mickey Callaway, he's the guy who built that pitching staff in Cleveland that we talk about with Kluber and Carrasco and Salazar and Bauer. If he can bring that stability and health to that pitching staff, I like where the Mets are at in terms of their ability to compete, but they're not on the level as the Nationals.
By the way, remember what I said last year? When things were going real bad for the Mets, I said, if I'm the Red Sox, I go find out about Harvey, see if I get him. Let's see what kind of year he has, bounces back, and see what kind of year that he has.
And frankly, it's just how bad can the Marlins get? That's the only question I have.
How many bad teams are there going to be this year?
Oh. There's going to be 8 or 9 teams that are just downright horrible. The Marlins are going to be up there for the worst team in baseball. Moving in to the Central, this is a very good division. It's a loaded division. Biggest question here is, can the Cubs get back to the World Series? They've extended their window. They go out and they get Yu Darvish. They lose a little bit in the bullpen by losing Wade Davis, but it's still a team with a lot of young stars like Addison Russell and Kyle Schwarber and Ian Happ. You throw those guys in with the veterans like John Lester and Darvish. This Cubs team and Rizzo and Bryant, this Cubs team is very, very poised again for another long
time. I still think it's top heavy, though.
It is.
I was going to say it's still Chicago, and I think St. Louis and Milwaukee, but I still don't think Pittsburgh and Cincinnati are going to go ahead and compete for the upper half or even make a run at it.
Milwaukee's going to be very good.
Yeah, they are much better. They're sort of like the Phillies and the Braves.
They're far much further along.
No, they are further along. They have some guys that have bashed the ball. They're not doing it with all rookies like those two franchises have. But with the whole minor league system. But I don't know, the Cubs, their pitching staff worries me a little. I know Arrieta was on his way down, but when you look at John Lester as your ace, Kyle Hendricks at 1-7 games, like he was hurt. I just don't know what to make of Yu Darvish. Everyone's raving about that guy. I need to see a top five Cy Young kind of season out of him before I buy into his big contracts.
Well, he's still very good. Is he going to warrant that money? I don't know, but he's still very good. It's all about the playoffs for him, where he struggled last year in the World Series. Can the Cardinals get back to the playoffs? I think that pitching is a question mark. You talk about they're relying on a top prospect in Luke Weaver. Adam Wainwright, who's been Mr. Dependable forever, he's on the DL to start the season. What's their bullpen going to look like? With Dominic Leone being their closer, who no one has even heard of Dominic Leone.
Wouldn't know him if I saw him at the Olive Garden.
I know. And then you go in and throw in the big move they made for Marcelo Ozuna. That offense gets better, I think. I think they're good. I don't think they're as good as the Cubs.
I think Ozuna has a shot at MVP. I know that a lot of people would say that's crazy. Look at his numbers last year in Florida, what he did. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't believe that trade. That was so under the radar. I mean, he put up huge numbers there. As to whether Busch Stadium will take some hits and home runs and ribbies away from him, I'm not sure. But I agree with you. That pitching staff's a little long in the tooth. When you've got a guy like Adam Wainwright as your number two or three starter, you have no idea what you're going to get from him.
And long in the tooth, talking about Yadier Molina, how long can he? I mean, he's still a productive hitter, but he's no longer as elite behind the plate. And he's not a guy who is, he's going to be pushing 34 years old or whatever.
By the way, this is the first time this ever happened in baseball. All six division favorites, overwhelming favorites for the first time. I mean, nobody even close to maybe even at least odds-wise to upset any of the divisional winners.
And the Pirates. What a shame. Yeah. I mean, they were there finally. It was there, and it just
wasn't
there.
Yeah, the Pirates and Reds are in total rebuilds. Nothing but youngsters there. to pay attention to. The Brewers, you mentioned Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, who they go out and sign. They're going to be really good on offense. Travis Shaw, former Red Sox, had a great year last year, too. Moving over to the West as we talk about the National League continuing on here in the huddle. The Dodgers are still an overwhelming favorite to get to the World Series. They're on par with the Nationals. They've got a lot of pressure, too. Question for me there is continued blending of youth and experience. You've got young players like Cody Bellinger, wins Rookie of the Year last year. Can he continue to ascend and get more consistent? Corey Seager, can he hit for more power this year? And then on the other side, Clayton Kershaw, can he get to 200 innings again? He had no earned runs allowed in the spring. Is he still going to be the guy who's the best pitcher in baseball?
And can Alex Wood possibly be what he was last year as the number two guy? Just came out of nowhere.
And Rich Hill.
And Hill is the same thing.
This
Absolutely.
Is the best division in like the history of baseball. Because even the Padres, who added people this year. I mean, you got Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Rockies, who were 1-2-3 last year. And even the third, I've never seen a third place team like 11 games over.
They both made the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I mean, whoever saw Arizona and Colorado in the playoffs last year? That came out of nowhere.
Giants are dead last. They had 64 wins. Giants are dead last last year with 64
and
wins.
And lost, and Bumgarner's gone. So
another month and a half to 2 months there.
So it's continuing on. The Diamondbacks, as you said, can they avoid the injury bug? A.J. Pollock is often injured. He's one of the best outfielders in baseball that no one knows about because he never seems to play. Zach Greinke is going to start the year on the DL. Can Robbie Ray continue what he did last year when he was really, really darn good? The Diamondbacks are good.
Yep.
They have some injury question marks. They've already lost Steven Souza, who they acquired from Tampa. He's on the DL to start the year. And for Colorado, it's all, the question is always pitching.
Yes.
But how about that bullpen? They invested a ton of money in Brian Shaw and Wade Davis to make the back end of that bullpen one of the best in baseball. Does it solidify that bullpen and keep the Rockies in contention?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Blackman, when I was out west, I saw a couple of Rockies games, and you look at that batting order, it's just ridiculous. And a lot of it is obviously because they're playing at Coors Field. But, I mean, is there any more underrated player than Nolan Arenado? You just don't know anything about him. I mean, you look at his numbers, and they're sick. Charlie Blackman set an unbelievable, almost MVP caliber year. Trevor Story can hit a bunch of home runs if he can stay healthy. Like you said, the whole problem for Colorado is John Gray is your ace. Tyler Anderson. I mean, you look at some of the starting rotation, you go, who?
Yeah, Chad Bettis, a great story, came back from cancer last year to pitch at the end of the season. He's going to be the number four. San Diego is a team that's been a doormat for a decade. They've been horrible since Trevor Hoffman left, which seems like forever ago. Jake Peavy, those are the guys in the heyday there. But this is a team with former Red Sox prospect Manuel Margot that played really well last year. Will Myers is there. Eric Hosmer is there. This is a team that's making an investment and a commitment to getting better, and they might be on the early start of that process.
Yeah, Will Myers, I mean, who knows? Yeah. Everybody had him as they remember when he was, his minor league numbers were just ridiculous. He was putting up record-breaking numbers, and even with Tampa, they traded him away. San Diego said, well, that'll work. But the Hosmer thing will be interesting because he had that one great year last year. The power numbers were there, but San Diego, Petco Park is where home run hitters go to die. I mean, let's
still
see.
Still won't get him the number four, though.
Petco is the anti-Coors Field when it comes to home run hitting.
I don't think it will get him the number four. It's still Dodgers division to win. Though, how much is Turner missing going to hurt them? You know, I mean, only for what, a month?
He's not for the Dodgers, okay.
For the Dodgers. Yeah. I wonder how much that – I don't think it's – because they're so loaded. It's just disgusting. So probably won't kill him that much.
And then on the Giants real quick, I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is the oldest roster in baseball. This is a team that only won 64 games last year, and they doubled down by going out and getting Evan Longoria and getting Andrew McCutchen. So they got established names. They also got older guys that can be injury-prone. We'll see what happens there. I don't think the Giants are going to be very good, but they're going for it. And now we got to go to break.
Well, we got Jim Deopolis coming up next.
Yes.
Jim Deopolis, our referee insider. Is that what he is?
He's
what
the former NFL head of officiating.
Our referee insider.
Just
coming
give
up next
my title.
Right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The local slant on all things sports.
We know that everybody's going to be gunning for us.
It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN. Guys, let's go right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Joining us now is the former head of officials in the NFL before Dean Blandino and Mike Pereira. Joining us now is Jim Deopolis. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing today?
Doing great. Good. Great to have you back on the show again. Right off the bat, you've heard so much about the catch rule, and now it's been changed again. I don't know. When you were officiating, in your mind, did you always go by the letter of the law, or did you say, hey, that's a catch, that's not a catch? What do you think about the new rule, and how did you interpret it?
Well, you know, when I was working, and what I tried to talk to the young officials about was, you got to make your it's what your gut tells you, what your eyes tell you. We have spent so much time micromanaging the catch. I think the NFL is going in the right direction, but the biggest mistake they make is to allow replay to get involved with the catch. Let the officials make the calls in the field. Are they going to miss some? Absolutely, they're going to miss a few. But to try to talk about making a move and the ball moving, and then all of a sudden they put it under the microscope of the instant replay. And I'll tell you guys, all that does is it just throws a wrench into the whole thing, because you can do whatever you want with instant replay by moving this thing one step at a time, one frame at a time. You know, do you see the laces move? Come on. You know, it's not that technical of a game. It's what your eyes tell you. And if the eyes tell you it's a catch, then it should be a catch.
Well, that seems so simple, too. Do you have any input? You know,
that's exactly right. It's so simple, guys. And what they do is they just keep mucking it up, and they're mucking it up because everybody wants to get involved with this. Everybody wants to talk about, oh, the ball's moving, or we're doing this. Hey, these guys are so good. They catch the ball. You know, the ball may roll a little bit, but when if they control that ball, they come down with the ball. If the ball doesn't bounce away from them, it should be a darn catch.
Jim, the former NFL head of officiating, don't you have any say in this? Can't you talk to these people?
No, you know, I'm really not involved with that aspect of it anymore. You know, they have their, you know, there's so many people trying to make decisions out here. The competition committee is getting so much outside influence from coaches, officials, outside people trying to make these decisions. And, you know, it really isn't difficult. They're making it so much more difficult than it really is. You know, I think they, you know, they have to address it, because that's all the news media, that's all the fans are talking about, is the catch. Is it a catch? Is it not a catch? What's a catch? What's not a catch? But, you know, answer to your question now, you know, I don't have any input at all any longer, and it's probably better, because they wouldn't like what I have to say.
Jim, before we get to the other new rule that I'm trying to wrap my head around, let's talk about pass interference. The Jets were proposing a rule that said, let's make pass interference 15 yards, or let's make degrees of pass interference. What's your take on pass interference?
You know, it's a great question, and it's been discussed for years and years before I got into the league, while I was in the league office, and even after I left the league office. You know, we've talked about pass interference. You know, unfortunately, sometimes you have these 60 and 70-yard penalties, but those are not the norm. You know, the thing is these defensive backs are so good that what's going to happen is once they get beat, they get beat on a long pattern, if there's any chance that that defender's going to catch or that receiver's going to catch that ball, you know they're going to grab the guy. You know, they're going to do something to make sure he doesn't catch it. And that's the problem with this 15-yard. You know, I think it's good in college. I remember looking at some statistics, and the majority of pass interference penalties are in the 15 to 18-yard area. So they're not a long passes. What happens is you get the long ones, and those are the ones that, you know, they kind of mushroom, because everybody sees that and they're going, oh, this is a game changer because it's a 50-yard penalty or a 60-yard penalty. But I just don't think they're ever going to go to a 15-yard penalty on pass interference.
Jim Deopoulos, former NFL head of officiating, with us here on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Now let's get to the big one, and the one that I'm still trying to even understand. A player cannot initiate contact with his head. If he does that, that's a foul. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, Jim.
That means let's go play rugby. I'll tell you, this is going to be a whole different game than what we have watched over the years. I understand exactly what the league is trying to do. There's a consensus that the injuries are just mounting with head injuries. But to say that any contact with the helmet, they're trying to get it in line a little bit with the targeting rule in college. But I was actually reading the rule, and it basically says, you know, they're going to have a designated member of the officiating department in New York watching the plays, and when a foul is called on the field, he's going to make a determination if that potentially, if that player is to be thrown out of the game. Well, you know, the problem with that is if the foul's not called on the field, you know, now you've opened up a can of worms. I just don't know how you're going to officiate this. How about what happens when an offensive and a defensive lineman start butting heads on the line of scrimmage? What happens when a running back goes around the corner and dips his head? Who initiates the contact? Are you going to throw him out of it? I think they've got so much more work to do with this. I understand what they're trying to do. I applaud them for trying to protect these players. I like the college rule. The college rule says, you know, if you target a player, you know, in the head or neck area, you know, with your forearm, with your head, with the crown of your helmet, then if a targeting foul is called, then you're going to be out of the rest of that game. The NFL they don't like to throw players out of the game. For all the years that I was up there, the philosophy was don't throw players out of the game under any circumstances. If you must, we let us deal with it on Monday and Tuesday in our meetings. We could suspend them. They have this concern about competitive balance, and they don't want a player thrown out incorrectly. That's the big problem. They don't want somebody thrown out by mistake. So, and then that's what's going to happen if you start putting players out of the game for these illegal hits, and you start letting the league office making the decisions during the game. I just don't think that's the way to do it.
You know, Joe, but you say they go back to the league office. There's one guy that's looking at it. Does one guy make the determination who gets thrown out, who doesn't get thrown out? Is it one guy for all the games, one guy per game? Shouldn't it be like a jury of three or something and two out of three wins? How can you have one game decide? One guy deciding all this?
It's one guy up there that makes the decision. You know, it was Dean Blandino. It was now it's Al Riveron.
Yeah.
And again, great. They have great decision makers up there. But again, they make mistakes. Let the officials on the field make the calls. It's just like replay. You know, all the replay decisions are being made by one individual up in New York who watches every play and he makes the decision. You know, if you don't have the confidence in your officials on the field or your replay officials, then get new officials or replay officials. But why put so much emphasis and so much pressure on the individual up in New York that he's going to make that decision? Because when he makes a mistake, then there's hell to pay, because people won't understand. They understand an official making a mistake. They don't like it, but officials make mistakes. Replay officials make mistakes. But now, if they make the mistake up in New York, now it falls on, you know, guys, people get more upset about that.
Now, Jim, Richard Sherman, among others, talking about how this is going to increase lower body injuries, which is the last thing you want, obviously, in football. But, I mean, is this defensively, you got to line up and then you have to wrap up high, kind of like we used to play in the neighborhood?
You know, we always talked when we went in to talk to players, we talked about a strike zone. You have to hit that player in the strike zone, you know, from the shoulders really into the thigh area, you know. But I'll tell you, the game is so fast, guys. It's so difficult. And even when a player lines somebody up to hit him in this so-called strike zone, if the defender or the receiver or the runner or the offensive player, if he crouches, if he moves, it's so difficult. And these players are just, they're taught to go after each other. They're taught to knock people over. They've always been taught to put that helmet right into, you know, put that helmet, try to dislodge that football. So there's going to be a whole lot of coaching changes, a whole lot of coaching philosophies changes. I think it's going to be really difficult this first year. And I'm really anxious to see how the league handles this, especially the ejection of players. That's going to be a real key on how they handle this.
Jim Diapolis, former NFL head of officiating, with us here on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. How long do they have to try to get the verbiage down right? When do they need to have all the words put together on paper as to what exactly it is. Because right now I'm picturing you couldn't quarterback sneak because the quarterback's leading with his helmet. I'm picturing running backs that can't lower their shoulder and run in the middle of the field. And I picture tackling being totally different.
They better get it ready for, the first practices. I know the officials, start getting together the first part of May, the middle of May. They've got a lot of work in front of them, and you're right. I mean, if a quarterback goes into a slide, if he goes head first, or a player goes into a slide, what if he goes head first and he leads with his head and hits somebody? I just don't know. I don't know how they're going to. It's going to be very difficult for the officials to handle this. I think they're going to try to get them all on the same page, but I can tell you, this is going to be a real difficult first year to try to understand exactly what the league wants. I think we know what they want. They want a game free of head injuries, but that's not the nature of football.
Jim, and maybe you can help me on this question. Number one question I'm asked every year nationally, I can never come up with an answer. I don't know if the NFL mandated this, sent you an email or whatever when you were refereeing, but I'm just wondering, why do the Patriots and Cowboys get every call?
Oh,
every
stop.
Call. Why is it, Jim? Why every call?
Stop.
Are you serious?
Exactly.
They watched the Patriots, and they got, they didn't get all the calls in the Super Bowl, but, basically, I'll tell you what happens. Some of these times, the Patriots are probably the most well-coached team, and they understand the rules better. They're taught the rules by their coaches better than any of the other teams.
Does Tom Brady have to talk to you guys all the time, though? Does he have to talk to you guys after every play?
Stop.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you the truth. He doesn't like to get hit. And I would think any quarterback wouldn't like to get hit. But, he's got a little bit of seniority and he's got a little bit of pizzazz in the league. So he can be a little bit more verbal about it. But I'll tell you, I think they do a pretty good job. They are pretty much mandated to really protect those quarterbacks, and that's what they try to do. They're the franchise players. You got to give them a little bit more protection. But whether the Patriots or the Cowboys or the Steelers or any of them get additional calls, I'll tell you, as an official, you're just out there and you're just hoping that you make the right call, because if you make a bad call, you're not trying to make up on it with the next one, because all you're going to do is get yourself into a deeper trouble. So you just try to do the best job you can and keep it on a level playing field out there.
And Jim, FYI, that question was asked by a very jealous, and we're tired of it here too, Giants and Dolphins fan. Just to let you know.
I got people saying, really, yeah. Turn his mic off now, talking about me.
Hey.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes, I've had to put up with it for a long time, but eventually they'll be 500. But listen, with all these changes, too, we're starting to hear about kickoffs maybe being banned. Is that happening sooner than later in the NFL?
Hey, that's really interesting because, I'm actually reading about it. And just to kind of give you guys... When a number of years ago, I was the director of intramural sports at the University of Kentucky.
Oh,
and we had a great intramural flag football program that the director of health services was getting ready to stop because of the number of injuries. And what I instituted, and this is back in the early 70s, what I instituted was we played flag football with no kickoffs. We eliminated kickoffs way back there, because that was the only way that they would let us keep playing it. Guys, you watch football, and it's mass hysteria out there on a kickoff. It's just 11 and 11 running at each other and just trying to knock their heads off, And so it's a really violent game. And I think they're gonna really do something with this where you may see the elimination. And they're going to talk about it with special teams coaches, special teams players, officials, coaches, etc., to try to determine if they ought to eliminate kickoffs and how that will affect the game.
All right.
Because right now, the kickers are kicking the ball 65 and 70 yards. They're kicking the ball into the end zone. So
Right. Just
put the ball in the 25-yard line and start from there and let's play football and eliminate all these blindside blocks, these helmet-to-helmet hits, these leg injuries when guys get hit low. And hopefully, you know, I think that will come up sooner rather than later.
All right. Jim, always love having you on. You always give us good answers. Always appreciate it, my friend. We'll definitely do it again. We'll catch up with you later on.
Anytime, guys. It's really a joy being with you. Give me a call. I'll be available anytime.
You got it. Jim Deopolis, of course, former head of officials.
He's going to regret that.
Yeah. Well, hey, Jim, we'll call you again just around September 1st.
All right, let's finish off hour number one with a little Vladimir Guerrero Jr. We'll tell you about that coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
And you thought the ESPN network hosts were opinionated.
Unsupportable opinion.
It's The Huddle with Rich Arnie and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Rich in Middleburg is the one that said, really, turn that off, or turn his mic off.
Turn what off?
The one that said, yeah, because the Cowboys and Patriots do get every call. I don't know if it is documented about that. You know, he mentioned Al Riveron. Al Riveron was that head of officials that I brought up that always seems to give the Patriots the call. Remember there was that article I brought up? I don't know if you remember that, but Al Riveron is now the head of officials.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's the one that always is a favor of the Patriots.
Right. That's the only reason they're any good every year.
You know,
it's definitely the officials.
All BS aside, do you know Dean Blandino was caught on the party bus of the Dallas Cowboys? You know that, right?
No, I didn't.
That doesn't look right when the head of officials is partying with Jerry Jones.
I assume he stays at Robert Kraft's house every time he comes to
Boston. I don't know, but that's not a good look when the head of officials is hanging out with Jerry Jones and partying with the Cowboys. All right, Brady, what happened with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. last night?
So Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a prospect for the Blue Jays. I heard a rumor that he might actually have made the Blue Jays roster out of spring training. I have to see that. I don't think he did.
He didn't.
He was going to Double-A.
Yes.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, he and Bo Bichette, Dante Bichette's kid.
So he's a Double-A prospect.
Right. New Hampshire Fisher Cats.
Yes. They played in Montreal last night in the city where Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was born, in the city in which Vladimir Guerrero Sr. Became a Hall of Famer, or helped become a Hall of Famer. He hit a walk-off home run last night. And did you hear the game-winning call? Because a lot of you heard the American version. Did any of you hear this one?
It's like a goal in soccer.
What the hell was that? Was that a human?
I picked out Vladimir and na-na-na-na-na-na.
Can we play that for Buster Olney? I'm sure he'd love that.
I think he's probably... Oh,
the French call.
I think we could play it.
Yeah, we'll play it when we start off with
that. But, I mean, how perfect was that? Nothing, bottom of the ninth, two outs, nobody on. Vladdy Guerrero wearing 27 in the Big O. Boom.
I'm still mad at Vladimir Guerrero for not picking the Expos for his Hall of Fame.
Matter of fact, we'll play that for Buster. Brady's got a Sports Center update. Then we'll talk to Buster Olney right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady. It's really sort of an addiction. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, mere moments away from Buster Olney. When we get Buster on hold, I'm going to play that clip for him. Yeah, but he's going to love that. I don't know if he's heard the French version of that. That is just awesome. That is great, huh?
I think I heard bonjour or something.
I saw the, I don't know if you've seen this on Facebook or maybe Twitter, they put up his father swinging. Mm-hmm. And
it's close.
Oh, I thought it was just two different angles, but no, it was both of them, you know, together,
right.
Swinging split screen. It was very close.
A little weird. It was about half full last night, which is too bad. But man, you when you schedule it on a Monday and Tuesday night, and from what we talked about with one of our friends up in Montreal last week, the ticket prices were outlandish.
Were
just
they?
Stupid marketing.
Well, what are you?
They talked about $92 tickets for an exhibition game. I mean, how dumb is that?
How many?
The
a lot
whole
of people
point
go?
Of yeah. that exhibition game is to fill the place. and have MLB notice what happened.
How many went? Do you know?
Last night was 25,000.
That's
not
incredible.
Even half full.
No, but that's still incredible for just a Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
There's people in Major League Baseball would die for 25,000 on a Monday or Tuesday during school season.
You're
preaching
to the choir there. It's time to build. Let's go.
Oh,
right downtown, next to the Bell Center.
That is incredible. No, but Vlad Guerrero Jr. It does. And then you said Dante Bichette's kids in there, too?
Yeah, Bo Bichette.
Well, you're getting old, huh?
And you can drive down to go see them. They're going to be down in Manchester, New Hampshire for some of the season.
All right. Do we got Buster on hold?
Buster on hold, so hopefully we can play this for him.
Play the clip for him. Hopefully you can be able to hear this while he's on hold. Go play it for him.
Vlad Guerrero Jr. last night, Buster.
All right, let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Hopefully, did you hear that, Buster, or what?
Not only did I hear it, but you guys had the same instinct I did. I led my podcast with it today.
Oh, okay.
with a clip of sounds, because as I said, a lot of things are going to happen in the Toronto Blue Jays this year, but the most memorable moment may have come from a guy who's not even going to play in the big leagues this year, and it was in an exhibition game. That was an incredible moment.
I was just talking, Buster, about how it was about half full, I think, for both nights. They charged high prices on a Monday and Tuesday night. Wasn't it more important for the city of Montreal to market a full house to the MLB than it was to make a ton of money off that?
I don't know. I think that decision is so complicated that I tend to, I wouldn't put it on, boy, they have to fill the house to show anybody in MLB. MLB knows that Montreal is one of the markets that they'll take a look at. They're probably only three or four, and I don't think the attendance in last night's game really would have make much of a difference one way or the other. I mean, let's face it, too. A lot of it comes down to, okay, which guy and where's that guy from who's going to step up with a big offer?
Yeah. Buster, you're out in L.A. You've got the Dodgers tomorrow on opening day. Ooh. Do you still get goosebumps for opening day?
I definitely get excited and fired up. And, to see the players in the last few days, I was around the Angels and the Dodgers, and, Mike Trout sitting at his locker, and his legs are jiggling because he's fired up, and he's just ready to go. All the players are just fired up and ready to go. And so absolutely, I don't know if I describe it as goosebumps, but you get, that special sense that, I remember the first time I walked into Fenway Park when I was 8 years old, and you look down the sort of the path of the runway and you see the green field. That's still there. Absolutely.
Buster, I used to be on the station locally that carried the Dodgers. You tell me, the fans, are they more baseball crazy out there in the West with the Dodgers and the Angels and San Francisco and all that, Seattle, Arizona, or out here in the East with the New York teams, the Yankees and the Mets and the Sox and all that? You tell me.
I think it's just different. I think they follow them differently. And I grew up, as I told you guys, a huge fan of the Dodgers, a huge fan of the Lakers. So through the 80s, you'd watch the Lakers and Celtics games, and what always struck me was if you watch the Lakers, the crowd would be generally euphoric and generally happy. On the other hand, if you listen to the Celtics fans as the ball's being dribbled down the court and things aren't going well, there's this angry murmur. And that, to me, speaks to the fan bases, right? In New England, there's always an angry murmur. If the count goes at Fenway Park in that broadcast at 2-0, and they're, Giancarlo Stanton or Aaron Judge is at the plate, there's the angry murmur in between. And I think that is central to baseball in the Northeast.
That's right. Hey, whatever could go wrong will in Boston. Yeah, that's just how we were born that way, I guess.
Yeah.
What do you think, Buster, as far as biggest storylines as we head into the new season?
I think that baseball more than ever is more polarized than ever because you have, a lot of teams are tanking. I think I would count probably six or seven teams are tanking. And what that also means is that the high end, you probably have six or seven teams with a chance to win 100 games. There are some great, great teams. The Houston Astros are a great team. The Yankees look like they are a great team. The Indians, you know, unbelievable. How much they accomplished last year, the last couple of years. I think they're going to win that division. They're a great team. The Red Sox are a great team, you know, potentially. I think the Dodgers are a great team. Washington is loaded. The Cubs are loaded. So that's one storyline. You know, individually, I think a lot of eyes are going to be on Stanton and Judge and what they do together. Can they be this generation's Maris and Mantle? I think there's going to be a lot of focus on Ohtani. And Mike Trout every year, you know, it seems like he ups his games. And this spring, guys, he's done it again. I don't know if you saw this, but he didn't get his first strikeout in spring training until a week ago. Oh. He went like 50 plate appearances without striking out, and I was talking with him about it. You know, you just get the feeling that this is going to be one of those all-time great years from Mike Trout.
Buster Olney of ESPN joining us on the Huddle, as he does every week at this time right here on 101.3 ESPN. Something you wrote about last year, but something I saw you talk about yesterday on Twitter, so I went back last year and read your piece. The four-man outfield might be coming into play this year. Are we going to see more teams start shifting in the outfield?
Yes. The Houston Astros, who are one of the most teams that are most progressive when it comes to the use of analytics, they've been using a four-man outfield. And I think you're going to see it in other places. Kind of like 10, 12 years ago, the Brewers and then the Rays became the teams that did a lot of infield shifts, and now everybody does it. I think you're going to see more teams do it. Part of the reason why is because we have this generation of hitters who are devoted to the idea of lifting the ball. They're talking about launch angle. And so in those situations in which, and this is the Astros' logic behind it, when you have a hitter at the plate, like Greg Bird of the Yankees is a great example, I mean, he is, in terms of the ratio of times he hits the ball in the air, it's like three fly balls for every ground ball. And if you got a big, burly, left-handed hitter at the plate, and you know he's probably going to hit a fly ball, a lot of these defensive shifts are based on the logic of put the fielders where you think the guy's going to hit the ball. And if you put four outfielders out there, in all likelihood, you basically reduce any chance of a double of any extra base hit other than a home run. And so I think you're going to see more teams do that in this effort to take care of risk management.
Which begs the question for me, if the third baseman plays half the plays defensively in left field, what was his position for the game?
Third base.
Okay.
You know, look, we already have that problem, right? When you get the third baseman shift over into short yes. Short right field, and right. You know, all the geeks like me who like to keep score,
yes.
I'm like, do you score that, you know, 5-3 still, or do you score it 4.5-3? Yeah.
You know, Buster, when you said that, all I could think of is like, oh, yeah, do that to Rod Carew and watch him slap it right through the left side for a base hit every time. Oh, bat 400 if he was up there like that.
Yeah, well, and you know what? If there was a Rod Carew type, like a Jose Altuve, you're not going to see those dramatic shifts. You will see them against the big, especially, I think, left-handed hitters, those big guys who are probably not going to try to cut down their swing. I was talking with a member of the Astros, and Freddie Freeman of the Braves is one of the best hitters in baseball, and they did it against him. And in that game, you could see Freddie Freeman sort of trying to block the ball and slap it to left field. And you know what? If you're the Astros and you have Freddie Freeman or Greg Bird or Matt Carpenter, the Cardinals, who are trying to slap singles to left field, you've already won.
Yeah, yeah.
You've already won the battle, the mental battle, because you've essentially taken the home run out of play.
Buster, how vital is Sonny Gray to the Yankees this year?
I think pretty vital, in part because they don't probably the biggest potential problem the Yankees could have would be with the starting pitching. You know, and Sonny came over there. I do think that probably one thing, and I talked with evaluators who believe this, that he needs to trust his stuff a little bit more. He bounces his stuff. He kind of picks around the edges. He throws a lot of pitches, you know, so he's one of those guys who go 110 pitches in five innings. And I know that the Yankees would love to see him be more aggressive down in the strike zone and trust his stuff more.
Buster Olney with us. Buster, how about in the bullpen? That Yankees bullpen is loaded. I think it's going to be phenomenal.
Crazy.
But the guy I'm curious about, how did Dellin Betances look this spring? Because tail end of last season, they were at the point where Joe Girardi didn't even trust him in big moments. How did he look?
He looked, in the games that I saw, and I saw him pitch in person twice, he looked tremendous. Now, I haven't looked at his updated numbers in terms of the walks, which is always a telltale number for him. I really believe that a couple of guys on that team, and Dellin is one of them, are going to benefit from a change in managers. And this isn't at all meant to be a knock on Joe Girardi. Look, he had very sharp words for Gary Sanchez last year. Everybody I talked to who knows Gary said they really bothered him, and he was upset. I talked to Dellen this spring about, hey, how's your communication been with Aaron Boone? And he just lit up. His face just got into a glow, and he said, man, he's so positive. And we talked like 10, 12 times during the course of the offseason. The Yankees understand how important Dellen Betances could be for that bullpen, and I would bet that that's probably part of the reason why Aaron was just trying to turn the page with him. And in the games that I saw, he had that great fastball, 98 miles an hour, that great slider, 81, 82 miles per hour, and the huge differential in velocity.
Buster, let's move over to the Red Sox, another guy who we know is vital to the team, who I think had a good spring and has high marks. How about Rafael Devers? What are people saying about him as he continues his development?
That he's a guy who could be a difference-making player. It was interesting, and there is an ongoing conversation among other teams about whether or not Devers can be a playable third baseman in the big leagues. The Red Sox believe absolutely he can be. They think he's got good feet. I talked with people with other teams who just don't believe that. They think eventually he's going to change positions. However, no one questions the bat.
Yeah.
And I remember talking with you guys last summer. That home run he hit off of Aroldis Chapman in Yankee Stadium, 103 miles per hour, opposite field in Yankee Stadium. To this day, I have not found another major leaguer who has ever seen a ball hit by a left-handed hitter in that spot in Yankee Stadium. He is a unique offensive player, and I know that early in the year, I think the first game I saw Alex Cora is going to bat Hanley Ramirez third. I would bet the family farm back in Randolph Center that by the end of the year you're going to have Rafael Devers a consistent presence in the top four spots in the lineup.
And by the way, you were very descriptive about your family farm in that article. I was a little concerned that people were going to be able to find it, which we certainly can't allow. So,
but, well, let's face it, there are probably not a lot of family farms left back in Randolph Center.
Sadly.
If they wanted to do that, I guess they could.
Hey, Buster, I'll get you out of here one more. Something I think I saw you put out on Twitter that I want to ask about. We're seeing a lot of young players, guys that have played 1 year in the league, or guys, in the case of this prospect for the Phillies, Kingery, has not played at all, signing long-term extensions. Is that a panic move, baseball players seeing that money in free agency is not what it was 5 years ago, so they're saying, let's just get it now and be done with it?
It is a massive concern on the union side. And look, we saw the union during the winter. They had their worst winter in many years, the cold free agent market. This feels like just one more ripple effect. It's like the dominoes are going. And I'd say about a month ago, I had agents telling me, boy, after hearing all the stories all winter about veteran players like a Logan Morrison and Mike Moustakas not getting contracts, they worry that the young players would panic, and sure enough, we've had this rash of young players taking these deals that are generally considered to be team-friendly. And look, Scott Kingery, as you mentioned, he hasn't played a day in the big leagues, and you put $24 million in front of anyone who hasn't had a day in the big leagues, of course you wouldn't blame the individual player for taking it. However, for the union, this is a potential disaster, okay? Because they want players to get the free agency to push the salary ceiling. And now Scott Kingery can't become a free agent, guys. He hasn't played a day in the big leagues until he's 33 years old.
Oh, yeah.
This is a chance to be a 9-year contract. It's a major concern for the union that this trend is happening. It feels like they continue to lose ground, and I do think there'll be continued talk within the union about making significant changes on their side.
All right, Buster. Enjoy opening day tomorrow. We know it's special, my friend. Have a good time, and we'll speak to you next week, as always.
Yeah, I can't wait. Clayton Kershaw against the Giants should be fun.
Oof, what a great one. Thanks a lot, Buster Olney, everybody.
Thanks, Buster.
Our MLB insider from ESPN, man. Can you imagine just enjoying that?
The world's busiest man right there.
Brady, did you announce that? If you did, I didn't hear it. So you may have already said it earlier, the Nationals and the Reds, that game already postponed.
I didn't say that.
Is it really?
It's postponed.
Annual Cincinnati postponement on opening day. Cleveland is now.
They're going to have opening day on Friday. So.
Although, is Cleveland home?
No, Cleveland's in Seattle.
That's right.
One other thing. I saw this. I think this is kind of funny. When you buy cappuccino or pancakes, you know how sometimes they can make it in a shape of a face or something like that?
Oh, I saw this too.
Did you see this? Now in Yankee Stadium, when you buy a beer, you can buy a beer, and the foam is in either Stanton's face or Judge's face. You should actually come.
No, they're going to be getting rid of that.
Well, they have it right now.
No, they're going to get rid of it.
Because I know it violates antitrust, or it violates what the the league
it's
policy.
It's against league rules.
Yeah, I think they're going to fight that.
So a draft, obviously. Yeah, this isn't in a can.
No, it's
so.
In a draft.
Okay.
And you see, and it's already loaded to the machines. You see their likeness. I thought that was pretty cool. I would want me to buy. I'd want to buy a beer over that, man. Would you not?
And they'll probably charge about $8 more for the product.
Yeah, I get. About to say I could see them charging like an extra dollar or something like that.
That'll go just over big on a 40-degree rainy day in the Bronx.
like the Yankee fans, like, just give me a beer. What are you talking about? So
a spokesman for Major League Baseball said, to the best of our knowledge, they have told them it's not authorized and to cease doing it.
Yeah, good luck on that. It's already going into the machines, by the way, they say. So I want to see what happens, if they're going to listen to them or what. But I think that is ingenious.
Yeah,
absolutely ingenious.
That's going to work. They can get through the little log jam of legalities here. That's going to work.
Do you think they charge more for something like that? I doubt it.
Yeah, I think they will. Yeah.
Will they get
kidding?
Out of here?
Because people will pay more.
$1 or $2.
If you can get a Yankees
I'll take a Judge beer, please.
I'll take a Miller Lite with a side of Aaron Judge.
Jeez.
Judge Lite.
Mojo and Milton says that MLB rules prohibit the use of a player's likeness to sell alcoholic beverages. That's why they won't be able to.
Oh, that's too bad.
People are no fun.
That is no fun.
Could you imagine an Arnie beer?
Oh, how great is that? You'd see a likeness of me on the beer.
I had 8 Arnies last night.
Oh,
Arnold Palmer's.
That is just, that is awesome. I hope they pull that off. Somebody's texting in Mets. Let's go Mets. First time texter.
So there you
obviously,
go.
Somebody that moved new to Burlington.
There's 2 of you.
Yes. We'll have to become best friends. That's what I say on that one. All right, Brady, what is coming up next?
Well, coming up right now, you can call in 802-655-6672. If you know the Golic and Wingo word of the day, caller number five that can tell us the word of the day, 802-655-6672. And remember, because we're off the air tomorrow, there is no Golic and Wingo word of the day tomorrow, so you'll have to wait till Friday. And I'll tell you this right now, hint, hint, Friday, we're giving away Yankees tickets.
Oh. Wow.
So Friday is Red Sox Yankees at Fenway.
And that will be announced, word of the day, Friday morning at 7:55 and 8:55 for Yankees tickets. So that'll be a feeding frenzy.
Fifth caller now, 802-655-6672. That's next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
With studios powered by McKenzie Natural Artisan Deli, your source for antibiotic-free meats, including uncured bacon made with pure Vermont maple syrup. This is 101.3 ESPN. 101.3 ESPN weather.
Quiet weather continues Wednesday night into Thursday under mostly cloudy skies. Lows tonight will be in the middle and upper 30s. Thursday, we're partly to mostly cloudy and dry early. Showers will arrive during the afternoon. Highs will be in the low 50s. Thursday night, rain becomes steady and lasts overnight into early Friday. Lows will be in the low 40s. With your forecast on 101.3 ESPN, I'm Chief Meteorologist Sean Barker with Local 22 and Local 44 News.
It's 49 degrees at 101.3 ESPN.
The Huddle is back. I'm sure you missed us. 101.3 ESPN. Let's go!
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Notice they don't screw around with opening day. If they even think there's going to be a little bit of just call it off, we can't have anything but a sellout on opening day. Nobody else has called off opening day. I'm sure the weather's not going to be that great on the East Coast. So.
Well, baseball's done a pretty good job this year.
This year, unlike many, many years, they have done a good job of indoor and Western and Southern venues to open, finally.
Yeah, well, that's why they call it off so quick, too. They don't want you can't mess with something like that.
Right.
That's too much money at stake.
That's too bad, because Cincinnati, when we were younger, that was automatically. Riverfront Stadium, that was always the opener for
the
season.
That was always the opener. Yeah. And it was only the game. That was the only one game that you did there. All right, Brady, who went ahead and won the Red Sox tickets?
That was, let's see, the first guy was Keith. This is Eric from Colchester.
Eric in Colchester. Bravo. Well done. Well done, Eric. So there you go. You
so
get
Keith
the Red
and
Sox
Eric
tickets.
We'll be sitting right next to each other.
Nice.
They will.
It's the four seats the boss owns right there over the third base dugout. And,
If there was a fifth seed, I'd sit right between them and we all would
great.
Go. Would that be fantastic?
I'm sure it would be a dream come true for all concerned.
Let's get to the 4-minute football fix.
Could you stop with that, please? My goodness.
I caught him totally by surprise.
I'm about to tweet what we're talking about.
I totally got him off guard on that one.
He's doing seven other things.
I know, but so when I do six other things, I do it well.
Yeah,
so
is that right?
Yes,
4-minute football fix. Arnie, you are enamored with the idea of the Patriots. Should they sign Johnny Manziel? And should they move him to wide receiver? That's an idea that Nesson floated out last night.
I saw these articles. I was sending it. It was so funny because it happened to tie the Patriots to Johnny Manziel. And it was different sources. It wasn't just Nesson. They were like, go over the place. This one had Manziel that they should sign and move him to another position, move him over to wide receiver or something like that. I mean, if you're not going to use him at quarterback, you don't get him at all. Though they do say that maybe the Patriots are interested in signing him as a backup quarterback. I don't understand the rationale for something like that with all the quarterbacks that are coming in. Why, if I even saw the rumor, and I'm right. Robert Kraft and I'm Belichick, I'm getting ahead of this one saying, no, not for us. I don't even know why people would want them to go
again. Hell, I'd rather have Brian Hoyer sitting there again, you know, than Manziel. This doesn't seem fair to me, to Manziel. I never thought I'd say that sentence, considering what his life has been like for the last 6 or 7 years, but does he want to be a wide receiver? Is it that important to him to get in the NFL to potentially make a team, and I mean potentially, as a wide receiver, then no shot at all as a quarterback?
Well, yes, I would say if your goal is the NFL and you can't be a quarterback, then yes, you would look at all other options.
Scott Frost.
But would you be the sixth wide receiver on the New England Patriots instead of being the number one quarterback, say, for the Montreal Alouettes?
There's a list of people that are fair.
And the Nesson article said this. If we are going to talk about Lamar Jackson having to move to wide receiver before he's even been in the NFL, then why can we go with a guy, talk about a guy who wasn't very good in the NFL as a quarterback? They tried to move Tebow positions
after they
proved he couldn't play. They moved Terrell Pryor. Julian Edelman's moved. Hines Ward, Antoine Randall-El.
Nebraska's quarterback, Scott Frost, Eric Crouch.
Eric Crouch, yeah. So, yes, it's fair. He's had a sample size at quarterback and he wasn't very good. Do I think that he's going to be an effective wide receiver? Well, his build is in line with a wide receiver. He's 6 foot. He runs well. He ran a 40 at the combine, which is in line with what Wes Welker did.
Catches like Tom Brady.
He's bigger than Welker. I don't know if he has any interest in playing receiver. He kind of tongue-in-cheek said if he was ever going to change positions, it would be to receiver. But I think if you're bringing Johnny Manziel in, you're bringing him in as a quarterback, and I don't know that the Patriots would want the distraction of Johnny Football. Now, they did it with Tebow, so I'm not saying they're averse to it, but do the Patriots want the Johnny Manziel service?
And for everybody who's out there, come on, the Patriots don't want a guy like this, they don't want a guy like this. There's only one reason they would take somebody like Johnny Manziel. So Belichick could see, I told you, you can get a superstar, or maybe a superstar, at the bottom barrel price of an NFL minimum. Because that's what he's going to get, the NFL minimum. So when you're talking NFL minimum in money, then Belichick is interested.
Don't get the wide receiver thing. I mean, I'm looking at this list going into camp next year, and I won't bore you with the whole list, but I mean, Britt Cooks, Dorsett, Edelman, Hogan, Malcolm Mitchell.
Riley McCarron.
I mean, McCarron is there, too, as an insurance policy. That's about two-thirds of the names on there.
Yeah.
I mean, his measurables from the combine or right there. I was looking at an article today. It's talking about Wes Welker. Said it was very Amendola-like, his numbers.
I mean,
but that doesn't necessarily translate, especially when you suddenly have to learn a, you know, ultimately complex offense at New England.
The other thing that bothers me about Manziel is that Manziel, the idea of teams talking to Manziel cancels out what we say about Colin Kaepernick. Someone says to me, Brady, Colin Kaepernick's not in the NFL only because of his protests, and only because he's being blacklisted. And maybe that's possible, but I simply say back, maybe. But Colin Kaepernick wasn't very good at the end. He was really good for the first 2 years of his that he played in San Francisco, and then he massively regressed. I didn't think he was very good his last year in San Francisco, although he didn't turn it over a lot. He didn't do anything overly special. He gets sacked at the highest rate of quarterbacks in the last 20 years. He holds on to the ball far too long. But then when you start saying Johnny Manziel was horrible and barely completed 50% of his passes and was a head case and has been in trouble with the law and has been in trouble with his team and he's getting talked to, it's then hard to use the argument Kaepernick's just not here because he's very good.
Let me ask you this, though. There's one difference between the two. Johnny Manziel, a Heisman Trophy winner, and, of course, a first-round draft pick. And let's be honest, a great player in college.
Yes.
Not good, a great player in college.
Yep. Yes.
My question is this. If Johnny Manziel can go to Texas A&M, and what was the place he went to? San Diego, right? It was UC San Diego.
Yep.
And throw to the receivers. How come Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a pro day and say, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to throw also? Why didn't the people show if he's really serious about getting back into the NFL? How come he doesn't go to one of these? Because I promise you this, if he was going to one, not only would 32 teams be there, the media would be there like they were covering the next Dan Marino or Tom Brady. I promise you that.
I think you're 100% right on that. I think the only discrepancy, at least that I know about San Diego's pro day, is that those receivers asked for Manziel to be their quarterback. Well, there's at least a relationship there where he knew those receivers. That's the only thing I think.
He could call his own draft day, pro day. He could say, you know what? I'm Colin Kaepernick. Yeah. I'm going to throw for everybody. I've got 4, 6, 8 receivers lined up that are going to help me. Let me tell you something. They would be tripping over each other to catch balls from Colin Kaepernick.
I think you're right.
I don't know. There'd be any free agent wide receiver, wide receiver would be tripping over each other to catch practice balls. 32 teams, and the media, it's going crazy.
Now,
you know?
So isn't this – so I'm reading into this as that's Kaepernick's fault.
Or maybe maybe he just thinks he's above it. Had that attitude.
Or maybe he just doesn't have any interest in being a quarterback in the NFL anymore.
Well,
we certainly heard of other plans.
Remember, he was throwing in Houston. He was doing the whole thing with Bob McNair a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
He was throwing in Houston. I think he has interest, but this is just me speculating. I feel like he has interest, but yeah. He doesn't seem to be as gung-ho about it as Johnny Manziel appears to be right now. I don't think Johnny Manziel is going to move to wide receiver. He also said, look, I have options. If nobody calls me for the NFL, that's okay. If nobody calls me for the NFL, I'll turn the music down for a second to play what Manziel said yesterday. And Manziel is clearly a master manipulator. That's kind of how people who become enabled, get enabled. They're able to sweet talk their way out of things. So I understand people that don't want to believe Manziel, but he's certainly saying all the right things.
If something pops up, it pops up. And if not, you know, and I don't get the opportunity to go back, I'm gonna go play in the CFL, and things are gonna be fine. And one way or another, one day down the line, I'll get back to exactly where I want to be because I'm not gonna stop until I do.
He makes it sound like he can just snap his fingers and be a quarterback in the CFL.
He's got an offer from the Hamilton Tigers.
All right, then never mind what I just said.
Yeah, he's got a standing offer from the Hamilton Tigers right now.
Who's a good team, by the way? I want you to know that. At least they were last year, I believe.
The Ticats.
Ticats on that.
Oh, well, yeah, they control his rights.
You get to some Giants stuff, boy. Again, I've been right on the Giants in day one. I told you, trade Odell and get some draft picks.
And it still hasn't happened.
No,
so.
But still.
No, but I mean, you're not right yet,
are you? It's going to happen, Brady. What's the latest on
that? Well, the Giants have said, it's been reported that the Giants are looking for 2 first-round picks for Odell. They still say they're not shopping him. I believe that they're not shopping him. I think they'd have to be floored with an offer. I think they're smart to say, yeah, we want 2 first-round picks because that's the top end of the market. I don't know that they'd get that either. It's rare that teams trade first-round picks for receivers. I think it's only happened like 7 or 8. I think it's only happened a handful of times in the last, 10, 15 years. Percy Harvin fetched a 1, a 3, and a 7 from the Seahawks to get him out of Minnesota. Adam Schefter said he thinks that's more in line with what the Giants could get, not 2 first.
You gave the stat that the Giants were 13 points better. Is that what it was when they have Odell Beckham?
It was 23-13 when he plays.
There was a stat when the Giants have Odell Beckham Jr., that was a reversal of that stat. That's like the Giants, but first of all, Odell Beckham Jr. misses about, 4 games a year? He's missed 17 games in 4 years.
That is not fair to say because nearly all of that was in one season.
But he is injury-prone with the ankle and the...
The ankle is a break.
But you know what, though? How many injuries has he had over the course of his season?
2.
2 that's kept him out for a long period of time. He's had 2 more that he's come back and fought through. I will give him that. Matter of fact, he had an injury before the ankle injury.
Yeah, that was the ankle.
No, before the ankle.
Right, but that was the ankle, and then he came back on that ankle, and then that ankle broke.
I mean, he's missed games because of injury, and I'm not so sure. Let me take that back. I am sure that spending the money on him is a complete waste of money, and you're going to regret it. And I told you that when... You brought up about Isaiah and the Celtics. If you would have done that, Brady, you would have crippled the franchise. And I don't want to see the Giants cripple their franchise in this situation.
Well, number one, I'm going to give a guy an excuse for a broken bone, okay? There's a difference between – broken bone is not degenerative or something. That's what we're talking about with injury. Okay, Kyrie Irving's knee worries me. Odell Beckham's ankle doesn't worry me. As far as him being injury-prone, he missed the first four games of his rookie season with a hamstring. He missed one game for the suspension with Josh Norman – and then he missed this season. I mean, that because of a broken bone. I don't know that that's injury prone.
Well, he does get a lot of injuries, but he does fight through some. Can I just say, you brought up Kyrie. I know this is the NFL football, but just a small thing on that. A doctor said, what did Kyrie have? Did you see that thing?
He had a broken kneecap a couple of years ago.
But did you see that? They said 80% of people with a broken kneecap never come back fully from that injury. Great. There was a doctor that said that.
Well, so. He's been pretty darn good since that broken
kneecap. I'm not a doctor. I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, but I'm not a doctor, Brady.
He's been pretty good, and it's been all predicated on quickness, i.e. good, decent, healthy knees.
He just brought that up, so I wanted to bring that up. But as for the Giants, there's no doubt in my mind that Odell Beckham Jr. will no longer be on the Giants when the season starts, and they will get a couple draft picks for him. They'll probably get a first and a third, maybe a first and a fourth. And they'll move on from that, Brady.
Well, Adam Schefter did say on NFL Live, he does predict that he will be traded.
Oh, gee. Oh, I've been saying that for how long now?
You said they should. Now we're saying he will. Difference.
Well, and now, if they remember I told you, if they trade the pick, I'm dying to see who's going to get up there and see how the quarterback situation is going to fall out after that. Because I still think Josh Rosen's the second-best quarterback in the draft, and I would take him.
So Cleveland has the 33 and 35, is that correct,
yes.
This year? Would you make that trade? I sure would. If I'm Cleveland, you get
what?
I mean, for the draft, you've got Odell Beckham, who you added to your roster, and you still have the 1 and 5,
1 and 4,
1 and 4.
Yeah, if I'm the Giants,
I mean, 1-4 and Beckham added to your team.
Well, if you're the Giants, you get 33, 34, and 35.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I'm going to let them get away with holding on to that number 4 pick. I think that's very tantalizing. I'd like to talk about that number 4
pick.
Well,
if I'm Cleveland and Giants want 33 and 35, I'm jumping all over that.
Well, not if I can't get a quarterback. Well, I still want a quarterback.
Cleveland?
I'm talking about the Giants. Okay. I still want to get one of those quarterbacks.
That's where we differ.
Yeah, well, they have to get a quarterback.
They already have a quarterback.
For a year, and then that's about it. Yep. After that, it's done. Brady, what do you want to get to next?
Well, I got to preview the American League.
All right, AL next, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Back to the Huddle, where you can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
I have some of the most outrageous ballpark foods for the upcoming year. That's in Last Story Standing. Actually, one of them is called the Dilly Dog.
Is that in Philly?
I don't know. I don't think it's in Philly, but I think it's like a pickle with a hot dog stuffed inside the pickle.
Lost me already.
No.
Absolutely disgusting.
Oh, people, what? Pickles and hot dogs?
As soon as you say pickle, that eliminates me from the conversation.
Yeah, I hate pickles.
Get out of here.
The smell makes
that guy
me
that
gag.
Pulls all the pickles off of my burger every time.
Well, that's one of the new ones, the Dilly Dog. Which will be a pickle, hot dog and stuff.
I think it would involve Bud Light somehow.
No, they stole it from Bud Light is what they did. Oh, there. There you go. All right, real quick, Brady, you're getting ripped by Alex in Moncton.
Yes, I am.
Brady, a broken ankle is different than just broken bone, ligaments, tear and stretch. It could definitely cause future problems. Thank you, Alex.
Should know that because Stefania Bell told us that earlier.
Yes, of course. All right, let's get to the American League. All right, where do you want to start? By the way, look at the three top teams in the National League. Look at the three top in the American League. Geez, I don't even know which is better, the three top in the NL or the three top in the AL. They're both just murderous. Who is it, Brady, the top three in the NL or the top three in the AL?
Ooh, well, I tend to think the AL is better than the NL usually. I think Houston's the best team in baseball, so I'm giving them the edge.
All right, go ahead.
So let's start with that division, the American League West. The biggest question, simply put, can the Astros repeat? The Astros are that good. They bring back everybody of significance from a year ago, and they brought in Gerrit Cole. If I have any questions about them, it's limited. Can Gerrit Cole stay healthy? Can Justin Verlander continue to get better again as he gets older? And then I mean, really, the back end of the bullpen. Ken Giles really struggled in the postseason last year. That's it. It's limited number of questions.
Does that make me a hypocrite if I'm going to say Justin Verlander will not live up to the money that he's making this
year?
Yes,
because you wanted the Red Sox to do it.
That's what you get when you win a World Series, though. How much does he get paid this year? I know a hell of a lot for a guy that's not going to win 10 games, Rich. I promise.
Oh, he's not going to win 10 games, Justin Verlander?
For that lineup, he's going to win 10 games. As long as he's healthy.
Just by standing there.
How much was he winning up in Detroit?
That team's much worse.
Detroit was horrible. He won 15 games last year.
But he was also, his ERA was pretty high.
3.6, not bad.
Okay, he's a 20-game winner.
Come on.
The guy's making a lot
of dough.
Don't
argue with me about baseball because I'm right.
I bet you if you took Verlander's salary and then compared it to like three or four of the other guys, he'd be making more than three or four combined.
I couldn't believe it last fall when Verlander got added to that roster and that rotation with Keuchel and now with Gerrit Cole, who has obviously had some issues, injury issues, and he just hasn't pitched that well on a fading team in Pittsburgh, but... Man, I got to believe he could be a breakthrough guy. Lance McCullers has been decent. I mean, I guess you look a little bit at that rotation in the 3-4-5 slot, but not really, because they're going to make up for it by scoring a bleep load of runs.
Brady, it's 2-3. Who's going to be 2-3? Is it going to be Seattle or the Angels?
I think the Angels right now are slated for the 2 spot. They went out and they made a lot of moves in the offseason. Yes, about Ohtani, but the big difference-making moves are, well, they re-signed Justin Upton to a big deal. He's going to bring in a bunch of runs. Ian Kinsler they traded for, Zach Cozart. Yep. A lot of people don't know about the American League West because of where it's geographically located. This is a good division, too.
By the way, you want to guess when Ohtani's doing his first start?
In AAA?
No.
I predict he'll be the number 4 starter.
Bingo! You better believe they're putting him on something against every other Drek number 4 in society. You knew that. Good guess there, Brady.
Thank you.
I knew that was going to happen.
And when you're number 4 in that rotation, you're not much, because that rotation, that's another team that's going to score a bunch of runs.
I have Seattle 2nd, Angels 3rd. I want that.
Well, I hope you're right, because 2nd place for Seattle will get them a chance to break the longest playoff drought in baseball.
I can't have you miserable all baseball season again.
Yeah, this is a Mariners team that, like the Giants are doing, they've got 1 foot in the rebuilding stage and 1 foot in the contend now stage. Felix Hernandez, Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, they're on their last legs as this core. Cano's 35 years old. Cruz is 37, and in the final year of his deal, if they don't win now, it may be time for a total rebuild.
All right, this just in, Cleveland has clinched the division over Minnesota. I think that just happened.
So you just skipped over the other teams in the AL West, okay?
What about the Lake Monsters affiliate?
First of all, Oakland's not even really worth talking about, are they? They're penned in last place, or am I wrong about that?
No, Texas could be in last place, I think.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Bad news for Oakland, and I will say this, former Lake Monster A.J. Puck, top pitching prospect in the A's organization, out for the season now, Tommy John surgery. You hate to hear that. He was good here in Vermont. He's a top 100 prospect. And Bartolo Colon's pitching still in this division. At 44 years old, he's with the Rangers, so that's interesting there. As for the Central, it's a two-team race and only two teams. The Twins are good. They made the playoffs last year. They made a lot of moves to try to get better, to try to catch the Indians, getting Jake Odorizzi in that rotation, going out and getting Lance Lynn, also signing Logan Morrison. They beefed up their bullpen, getting Addison Reed. As Buster said, the Indians might be on their last leg, but they're still the class of that division. The White Sox and Royals, they're rebuilding, and the Tigers might be the worst team in baseball.
It's unreal.
So if you're a Red Sox fan, take note of what the Tigers are, because when you put old aging contracts and no prospects together, that's what you become when you don't win. The Red Sox could be the Tigers.
Brady, you asked somebody, was it Buster Olney or who did you ask, saying if there was a sleeper in baseball? You guys said the White Sox.
He said that the White Sox
for the division, I think.
No, not this year. He said they are the next tanking team to maybe win a World Series, but they're 2-3 years away.
They're there, but they've got a ways to go, no question. I still believe Cleveland is the team to beat in all of the American League. I really do. With that pitching rotation, Carrasco's got to stay healthy, though. He's already banged up. You lose him, and that changes everything.
By the way, it's bad for baseball if Cleveland runs away with it, and if in the National League, who do we say we're going to run away?
Washington, Cubs, Dodgers.
The Nationals. That's bad. You're going to have two divisions where the 2, 3, 4, and 5 has no chance.
Yeah. Someone's
going to
hurt
attendance there.
Yep.
American League East, this is where the bread and butter is. Let's start with the teams that nobody cares about. The Orioles, where is Manny Machado playing at the All-Star break, just after the All-Star break of the trade deadline? Can Buck's crew stay in it long enough to not have the massive sell-off? The Rays, We know their last place in this division going into the season. Toronto, I think, is very interesting. They, like the Mariners, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. They've still got Josh Donaldson. They've still got Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez, some really good players. But they've also got some aging pieces like Troy Tulowitzki that we don't know exactly what they'll be. It all comes down to the Red Sox and Yankees.
Rich, I think just listen carefully. I think the Red Sox are closer to third than they are to first, which means they're closer to Baltimore than they are.
Insane.
No, that's not that insane. Baltimore's not that bad of a team, and I think the Yankees.
I think Toronto's better than Baltimore.
Oh, so you think they're? Okay, if I had Toronto third, would you say they're closer to Toronto than they are to the Yankees, or no?
Right? I think they're closer to the Yankees.
I'm 0 for 2 there.
So is Dylan Bundy suddenly going to be a Cy Young Award leader of that team? And Gausman, and I guess Alex Cobb is certainly a nice addition. But I mean, there's some potential on the pitching staff, and this team's always going to hit. Scope's going to – I mean, he was – talk about underrated for a second baseman especially. You know what you're going to get out of Machado. Adam Jones will have a nice comeback here. And so, as always with Baltimore, it comes down to that pitching rotation. Who knows?
Yeah. I have Yankees, Sox. I went with Baltimore. I went to put them third instead of Toronto.
I'm going Toronto third. I think the Blue Jays are still viable. They were in the American League Championship Series 2 years in a row just a few years ago. I think with a healthy pitching staff and one of the best young closers in baseball, I think they can do it.
I know we're out of time. I just want to say, you know what, you don't realize, you know, when I was working in Dallas, Texas Rangers, two pitches away.
Yeah.
Two strikes away from winning a World Series. Now they're maybe the worst team in their division. I mean, think if you're the fan base. And I remember people at the party. I mean, I'm like, well, I was on the air like, we're one strike away from a World Series. People are crying.
It's going to happen.
I thought for sure it was going to
happen.
I can
die now.
I mean, now they're not. They may never win one.
Well, look at Cleveland. They're still waiting, and they're good. Yeah, but tease them every year.
To be two strikes away. Two strikes, and you still had a chance in the extra innings, but two strikes away to win it different times and not be able to pull the trigger and win it is just absolutely disgusting. We'll come back. Last story standing, some of the most outrageous ballpark foods for this year. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, if you go to Yankee Stadium, they're going to be selling something called a pinstripe shake. A pinstripe shake. It's what it is. It's just a vanilla shake topped with churro, cotton candy, Cracker Jack, and caramel drizzle.
Okay.
You like that one?
That sounds
only
good.
$24.95.
No, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how much that one is, but that, yeah, there's certainly a lot. How about the Rocky Mountain Poor Boy? You know, I don't know how to say it. You know, the P-O apostrophe boy, Po Boy. Yeah.
Yes.
The Rockies are selling that one. Mountain oysters aren't actually oysters at all. They're cattle testicles.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what they're going to be saving. So if you can stomach that, it comes with some garlic slaw, guacamole, green chili ranch, pico de gallo, and some type of cheese. I don't know what that is. So that's if you want to try those.
Yum.
And you can get those at a good price.
Oh, I'll bet.
In Georgia, they have potatoes, but not your typical potatoes. They're stuffed with jalapeno cheddar sausage wrapped in bacon, then topped with cream cheese, cream scallions, and more jalapeno.
On the ground by the sixth inning.
Yeah, and there's the Log Cabin Waffle Sandwich that you can get in, I believe, Toronto, where they have waffles or the bread with pulled pork, cheese curds, maple baked beans topped with mole sauce. Oh, I don't know even what mole sauce is.
I want to be sitting next to that guy after two of those.
There's still the chocolate-covered grasshoppers in Seattle.
Yes, they have that. Wow. And then they have in Arizona, they have something called the asada dog. It costs $28
for a hot dog.
For a hot dog, I mean, it's ridiculous.
What's in it? Like gold drops?
Yeah, it's 18 inches long. So let's just go and get that right off the bat.
That's still not enough for it.
Well, it has fries and queso blanco and carne asada and pico de gallo and guacamole.
That was pico de gallo.
No, it's gallo, I think.
I thought it was pico de gallo.
Look, if I
whatever, it's going to put on there too.
Whatever right, it is, your seat's getting smaller.
Thanks
every
to
inning.
Intern who?
Intern Nathan.
Nathan was here today for Krabby Brady and Rich. I'm Arnie.
Wow.
Champlain Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.